negotiate. That's why there's 14 senators sneaking across the border. 14 senators, capital disorder. 14 senators, new Wisconsin heroes. What's the score? Senators 14, Governor Walker 0.
Good morning. Welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show. My name is Sarah Schultz, and this is where we, the people, are now in session. As you can hear, I have a little bit of laryngitis. Actually, I was going to say I was fighting laryngitis all week, and unfortunately, it was winning. So I have a little bit of a Kathleen Turner voice today, so you have to forgive me on that. Hopefully, next week it will be better, and maybe by the end of the show it will be better. It's been getting better since Monday when I had no voice. So this is definitely an improvement. This is day 107 of Hollis Malin's hunger strike. And, you know, I would just like to say that if anyone is going out to Washington, D.C., I know there's Occupy D.C. going on next weekend. I know there's people that are trying to get out there from Wisconsin. If you're in Madison, you're trying to get out there, please talk to Hollis. It would be really great if we can get him out to D.C. It would be really nice. It's kind of one of his goals. Part of his hunger strike is trying to get out there, trying to get the attention of homeless vets, of vets in general, and it would be great to get him out to do that. So if you're going, you have a little extra room in your car, go talk to Hollis. He's out there right by the Capitol. I'm sure he'd be happy to go with you. This is also day 13 of Occupy Wall Street and day 6 of Occupy Chicago. Now, Occupy Chicago is really interesting because Chicago next to Wall Street is the big financial area. You've got the commodities exchange down there. You just have a lot going on in Chicago. And I know there's a lot going on in New York. And I know there's cops and all sorts of stuff in New York. But we can't forget about Chicago. It's a small group of people. And the cops are starting to beat down on them as well. So if you're in Wisconsin, and actually we're going to have to talk to someone later in the show from Occupy Chicago. But if you're in Wisconsin, you can't get out to Occupy New York, get out to Occupy Chicago. We'll discuss that later. The rest of the show, let me tell you about what's going on with the rest of the show. It's a great show today. Coming up in just a minute, we've got Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup with Yuri Raskin. And after that will be Senator Mark Miller. Then Wendy Stout, I believe, from Emerge will be on. And we're going to have Up North with Frank Kane, followed by Mark Banks from Occupy Chicago. So you have to wait to hear about him to the end of the show. If you have any questions or comments, the phone number is 310-742-1896. And my toll-free number is 877-497-1797. I also have a live discussion on Blog Talk Radio. You get onto Blog Talk Radio, and there's a chat going on. You can get into the chat and ask your questions to the chat. I'm more than happy to answer them on the air or ask them on the air as well. Now, I'd like to start out this week's show with a thank you, an announcement, and a little bit of discussion about Walker and education. First, I'd like to thank Bill Dobie, my producer, for filling in. Yes, last Saturday, I was at my sister's wedding, yes, with laryngitis, but I was at my sister's wedding. It was a beautiful wedding, and I was really excited that I could go, and I'd like to thank him for filling in so I could do that. I think he did a great job. I really like the new segment he brought in the weeds. You'll be hearing that every third Friday of the month. So thank you, Bill, for sitting in for that. Also, the announcement is there is a forum. It's called All About ALEC. It's a forum on the American Legislative Exchange Council, and it's sponsored by the Oregon Area Progressives. It will be on October 22nd from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. If you like more information, go to the website at allaboutalec.org, all one word. You can look at my Facebook page later, and I will make sure it gets up there. Now, Walker. Every time Walker talks about education, he brings up the Kakwana School District and how his little tools helped turn around a $400,000 deficit to a $1.5 million surplus. I'm getting really tired of hearing about Kakwana. I really am. And a couple months back, Scott Witkoff, as you hear my paper rustle here, Scott Witkoff in July wrote a wonderful blog about it. He's Badger Democracy. And I really recommend you go back. It's been July 8th. Recommend you go back and read this blog. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a paragraph. So let me read that to you right now. It says, according to Scott Witkoff, a comparison of the current and previous budgets for the Kakwana School District shows that the statements that they were talking about in the above paragraphs, which I'm not even going to get into some of this stuff because there's so much going on, but it basically says it's untrue. It says the budget deficit, in fact, that the Kokwana School District had was created by this district accounting practices. In 09 and 10 of the budget, of the Kokwana School District budget, Kokwana began the practice of level 2 budgeting. Simply stated, the district now includes future fixed costs as its current budgeting cycle. Arnold Newson, now he is the, he has something to do with the school district. I don't have the name in front of me. Again, you need to go and read this so you can get the whole picture of this. But he says that the post-retirement benefit liability is around $22 million a year. The problem with this number is that it includes all present and future staff retirements. Normally, a district would express that number as a future expense, balancing it with future revenues, such as future obligation, which would have no negative fiscal impacts on a school district, unless it includes a portion of that obligation in its current year, which is exactly what Kokwana has done. The annual expenditure for post-retirement benefits was $1.05 million per year in the 09-2010 budget. The district added an additional $500,000 per year as a level 2 expenditure for the future. The district did the same accounting for computer infrastructure at $300,000 per year in spite of already budgeted expenditure in this area and building maintenance at almost $1 million per year, again, in spite of current improvements already in the budget. $1.8 million in additional expenditures, not for current but future spending. In the 11-12 budget, the district reduces some of its level 2 spending in computer and business and building maintenance. The future consideration is still nearly $1 million, almost 50% of the lost revenue. This practice creates the appearance of its fiscal emergency, especially the citizens who look only at the bottom line. True accounting of the current year's expenses would have cut the deficit nearly in half, but would have made less impact on shaping opinion. That was by Scott Witkoff. Read the whole blog. Basically, because Kokwana did some interesting accounting practices, Walker is using them as an example. I think that's kind of perfect, actually. And I'm wondering if Walker and the school district use the same accountant, because he seems to use some of these same practices for his stuff, too. On that note, I'd like to welcome in Yuri Rashkin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup.
Tara, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. I was going to call you Kathleen Turner, but I remembered, no, it's Sarah Schultz.
Yeah, so, yeah, keep that in mind.
Right, right. So we got lots of exciting news happening this week, and I suppose starting off at the top, Waukesha County Clerk Kathy Nicholas, who touched off a firestorm in April when she revealed that she hadn't reported 14,000 votes in the race between Justice Prosser and challenger Kloppenberg. It turned out that she did violate the law, but apparently her conduct was not criminal. Go figure how that works. But apparently the reason for that is that she made an honest mistake. And I guess when other people say that it's an honest mistake, that's when it's considered an honest mistake. What I loved about it is that Kathy Nicholas promised to follow what she termed the board's recommendation and said that she looks forward to rebuilding the trust of Waukesha County residents in the election process, as it is the foundation of our democracy. You know, and it seems to me that probably the first thing that voters of Waukesha County can do to restore democracy is vote Kathy Nicholas out. But, you know, that's up to the voters of Waukesha County. I'm just kind of thinking here. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm wondering how this whole law thing works. I mean, if I rob someone of $100,000 or $100, sorry, I didn't mean to do it. It's an honest mistake, you know. Okay, it's okay. The officer will be like, it's okay. We'll let you go. No problem. How does that actually work? I guess only in Fitzwalker State, in the Walker administration.
There's something here that just doesn't add up, in my opinion, but I guess this is how, I don't know if there's a legal term for honest mistake, some kind of a Latin term, honestus, mistakenness, I don't know, that allows this to be perfectly okay if you make a mistake that loses 14,000 votes. Nonetheless, and then turns over the election to somebody that you used to work for. Anyway, Moving on, we've got Governor Scott Walker, who was embarrassed by Brian Williams, and of course, our very own Sun Prairie's Heather's Du Bois Bournaine. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but more importantly, she is the voice behind Monologues of Dissent, which is an excellent blog, as I'm sure many of your listeners are aware. Heather basically writes open letters to Governor on a regular basis, and I'm not sure if she's been responded to yet. As I recall, she has not. So she piped up again in a most wonderful way and let Brian Williams know that when he put together his Education Nation panel and invited Governor Walker, that was just, what was the term, inviting an arsonist to a panel on fire prevention. And, of course, you got to give Heather a lot of credit for when she appeared on the Ed Schultz Show to bring in the term tool job into the national conversation. And as we now know, tool job is someone who promises both tools and jobs and delivers none. And it's just great because Heather is such honest and clear voice, and she speaks her mind, and it's being heard. You got to love that. So, any comments on that one before I move to the next story?
I was going to say, I know she posted on Facebook that she was going to try to get tool job in, and I was so excited when she did. I was like, yes, way to go, Heather. So.
I know, and it's always a challenge when you're interviewing, when you're being interviewed, and especially, I think, on a high-profile show such as Ed Schultz, to remember to say all the important things that you wanted to mention. And she managed to sneak that tool job in there, and I love it because it's you got to say those kinds of things. So, moving on to the next story that we've got, what do we have next? Oh, of course, you have to remember there will be a Recall Walker sign flown over Camp Randall during Saturday game. That's going to be exciting. Of course, somebody's saying that it's a night game, so is anybody going to see it? But I'm sure people will see it. I think those stadiums are pretty well lit.
Well, not only are the stadiums lit, but I was just told today that there is just massive media all over the place down there already. So how cool would that be to have that fly over and it's on like every radio, every TV station, in the Northern Hemisphere? How cool would that be?
Exactly. Just, here in Wisconsin, we remember that Walker's going to get recalled. Moving on, we got mining group that reforms to support exploration. This is part of the Walker agenda that we're going to see here more prominent in a near future. There's there's obviously a sign that momentum is building for major changes in state mining laws. And so a group of business and labor leaders, and that's really significant, announced on Wednesday that they were reconstituting the Wisconsin Mining Association. I think that the key there is really what makes this interesting is that there is a United Steel Workers Union that is part of this association. So we're really going to see how this shakes out, because clearly there's going to be some changes in the way in the mining laws in the state of Wisconsin. Now,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
also, the gentleman who's the CEO, kind of the chairman of that board, the association, was Tim Sullivan, I believe. And he
Correct.
Was the CEO of Bacchus, I believe is how you say it. And that was a company that made mining equipment that just got out by Caterpillar a couple months back.
Well, yes. I mean, it's kind of like NBA coaches. You know, you get fired in one job, you get the next job. But perhaps this was just another opportunity to apply your experience in something that has to do with the area. But we're going to see where this leads. Then we have Andy Jorgensen, representative from Fort Atkinson, I believe, advocating push for public financing. And you just got to love that because the Wisconsin Election Campaign Fund should be restored. And it was $1.1 million. Of course, the irony is that money that was being spent on letting people run without being total slaves to campaign donors was transferred to implement the new voter ID law, which is really a poll tax. So it's just quite ironic that you take money out of something that helps politics stay clean in any sort of way, and you spend it on implementing something that limits people's ability to vote in the first place. But, you know, in Fitzwalkerstown, that seems to be par for the course. So hats off to Representative Jorgensen for pushing this forward. I mean, you can be a, you can build a solid political platform by just advocating all the things that Governor Walker, you know, enacted, and advocating restoring all those destructive items to Wisconsin, and you've got yourself a pretty good platform right there. Moving on, we've got Governor Walker says that he did not know that his spokesman had signed a criminal immunity agreement until it was made public last week. And you got to love that because, you know, if your spokesperson has a criminal immunity deal that he signed, you were not aware of that. What does that say? It says a lot of interesting things. Personally, it's always this little tidbit that I find fascinating, such as Walker referring to his Eagle Scouting days as a sign of his integrity and honesty, because obviously no indecent person ever been made an Eagle Scout. So I you know, and if you're going to be in his age and his whatever accomplishments they may be, and you're still relying on that Eagle Scout as the badge of honor, you should have accomplished something since then that proves that you have integrity. But
well, and it's kind of like the marketing companies that market will market on their weaknesses. You know, they'll market on, look at, we've got the best networking around, and they don't. They're just pushing it. So when Walker has to say, look, I'm a really good guy, I mean, that's kind of like, it's a marketing of, I'm really not, but I have to push it because no one really believes it, and I don't either,
well,
but I'm going to have to push it anyway.
When your only strength is Eagle Scout, I think you got other problems. But, well, again, this is for the prosecutors to determine.
Well, especially, know you know, especially if he's like, look, I was an Eagle Scout, but now you're the governor of a state. I mean, doesn't that count for something? Can't you go, look, I'm the governor. Look at what I, you know. No, I was an Eagle Scout. Okay.
Well, and if he did complete that, then it's good to know that he did complete something that he started in his life as far as, you know, self-improvement. That's good. Let's see, Scott Walker, unemployed or not trying hard enough. You got to love that story. And that's actually kind of a sign of a bigger story, because there's this whole situation that we're seeing developing in Wisconsin where the employers are saying that they can't find enough qualified people, and yet we have high unemployment in the state, and it's actually increasing. And the governor, of course, chooses to blame who? People who don't have jobs. It may not add up to somebody, but it makes perfect sense to him to slam those that are not able to fight back, those that need help. But that's Scott Walker for you. So, so adding insult to an injury in a classic Fitzwalker Stan fashion. And then, of course, we have this new special session for private companies, and that's something that's coming up in our immediate future, if not present. Scott Walker called a special session of the legislature beginning today, entitled Back to Work Special Session. And, of course, you have to, you know, you and I know that when you call something one thing in the Republican Party, that means you're actually doing something opposite, but the details will be forthcoming. Back to Work Special Session, the proposals to be taken up by legislature concern access to capital, regulatory streamlining, workforce development, tax relief, transportation and infrastructure, and litigation certainty. That's quite a long list of things to destroy. Anyway.
Well, and how many of those actually affect jobs? I didn't hear any kind of job creation in this.
And, of course, it says many of these bills resemble ALEC templates crafted at the group's New Orleans conference this past August. So this is more of ALEC agenda running Wisconsin down. So you just have to hope. And, really, one of the biggest problems with this is the fact that this is a special session which allows Walker to get these bills done without, you know, without even the little scrutiny that might be possible by Democrats who are in a minority and therefore have less leverage than ever, as any party in a minority does. So, but even under that set of circumstances, he feels that it's the wisest thing for him to do is to push this as quickly as possible with as little sun shining on these legislations as possible. That's where you got to wonder how anybody who claims to be a conservative can support this governor, because even a conservative should say that's not the way you pass legislation, unless you're running scared and don't believe that what you're doing is the right thing.
Well, I mean, they have the vote. They have the majority in everything. Why have to push it through? You already have the ability to get it through regardless of what anyone thinks. Why ram it through more? Actually, the special session is something I'm going to talk to Senator Mark Miller about, who will be coming on next. And we're going
to And what a better person to talk to than Senator Miller.
Exactly.
He'll be in the middle of it. Final story that we wanted to highlight is Wisconsin Supreme Court takes payday loan case. And that is quite interesting because this actually case stems from a loan that this lady from Onalaska secured from Payday Loan Stores of Wisconsin. And according to the documents, she was actually filed a lawsuit against, and she countersued because she said that the interest on the loans varied from 446% to 1,338%. And so the Wisconsin Supreme Court is actually going to take a look and see if the state law permits judges to determine when payday loan interest rates are too high, like maybe 1,400% on a loan is too high.
Just slightly.
Right. So we will see what happens. This is going to be most interesting week, as it seems every week in Fitzwalker Stan is the most interesting week ever because things that you couldn't possibly imagine take place.
Every time you think something couldn't happen, it does. This is better than fiction. What do you see coming down the pike for next week?
Well, I think that the fallout from the special session is what we're going to see. And you know those bills as well as anyone, frankly. And the fact that it's an ALEC template is what worries me the most because that means there's really no original thought that's involved. And this is nothing that applies in any way to Wisconsin. This is something that a national agenda that's being pushed through each state individually. So we're going to see how that whole thing shakes out. There is some pushback from legislators, including a story I saw this morning from, I think, 10 bipartisan so senators from both Republican and Democratic Party asking for further review, at least when it comes to, I believe, expansion of school voucher system. And in general, it seems to me that the only push that is going to come that kind of opposite of Walker push is to try to delay and have some discussion on these bills. But the votes are still not fundamentally there for the Democrats. So hopefully, you know, if you know, you can't pack up and go to Illinois every time. The governor brings out a new batch of legislation. So you got to find other ways of trying to shed some sunshine on it. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully these things can be slowed down so that the rest of us can kind of dig in and see all the things that, you know, because you know that there's language buried in those pieces of legislation that has nothing to do with what the legislation is supposed to be about and is really not reflective of what the title says because you can't judge a legislation by title. So hopefully things are slowed down to the point where we can take a look at it.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right because we really do. We need to look at these new bills. It's good. I'm glad the optimists are still out there because it's hard to keep that in when things keep getting stuff rammed down your throat like this. So
one day at a time.
Exactly. We keep moving forward. Well, thank you so much for being on, Yuri. I'll catch you next week then.
Sounds great, Sarah. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
That was Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup with Yuri Rashkin. Now, speaking of moving forward, I'd like to welcome Senator Mark Miller to the Sarah Schultz Show.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Beautiful day, isn't it? It's a beautiful day today.
It's not raining, and that makes me always excited.
Well, no, this is just one of those beautiful days in Wisconsin that we just relish, and where there's a hugely exciting football game coming up in Madison on Saturday that I think the whole country is going to be watching. So once again, Wisconsin will be in the spotlight.
And I expect the Badgers to win, actually.
I expect too. You're the optimist, and so am I.
Oh, they've got a great team. So don't get me on football. I can go on for another hour on football.
Well, it seems to be the topic of for this weekend anyway. So it's always a pleasure to be on the phone on your program again.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I have a huge intro for you, and let me just kind of get to the highlights. Senator Miller was a graduate from Middleton High School. He got a Bachelor's of Science at UW-Madison. He attended the Bauhey Institute for Leadership, Legislative Leadership Development in 1999. He attended the Fleming Fellows Leadership Institute in 2002. He was a former military pilot with the Wisconsin Air National Guard, and he retired lieutenant colonel. So thank you for your service, sir.
He
was a former real estate property manager, and he's a member or was a member of the governor's task force to improve access to oral health in 2005. He was also on the Dane County Board of Health in 98 to 2004 and Board of Health for Madison and Dane County in 04 to 07, and also the Dane County Board of Supervisors from 96 to 2000. Senator Miller was elected to Assembly in 98 to 2002 and elected to Senate in 2004 and reelected in 08. He is now the minority leader, and in 07 he was the majority caucus chairperson. That is quite a resume, sir.
Well, you know, I enjoy public service, and it certainly has been an exciting time. Among those, during that time, I think one of the most significant pieces of legislation that I was directly involved in was the passage of the Great Lake Compact, where its passage was very much dependent on its passage here in Wisconsin.
Well, and that was a great piece of legislature, too. It really saved the Great Lakes and helps protect them. And I was really excited that it went through.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. It was a very important piece of legislation. And we thought it was going to have, it might have a longer time in the U.S. Congress to get concurred once it had passed through all the states and the provinces of Canada. But the U.S. Congress adopted it in record time, and now it's the law of the land, and we can go forward and have a direct hand in protecting the great states. And so, anyway, I just wanted to throw that in, because when you went through all that long list, I said I'd like to pipe up with something that I'm very proud of.
Well, it's a great piece of legislation. Thank you so much for working on that. Now, if anyone has any questions for Senator Miller, the phone number is 310-742-1896. Before I get into any of your questions, I'd like to say thank you. Thank you for all that you have done to help the people of Wisconsin. Thank you for your filibustering. Thank you for bringing all this to our attention. Thank you for everything.
Well, you're welcome, Sarah, but I have to say thank you back to the people of the state of Wisconsin who recognized in very short order what was happening and rose up and took recognition of the fact that they have to have responsibility and investment in our political future, because otherwise, if we have apathy, we will have the kind of government we have right now, which is, you know, where we're seduced by the big money folks like the Koch brothers, and will be overtaken with the agenda from the American Legislative Exchange Council. I heard you earlier, a guest, talk about that, and that's an agenda that is being pursued in a number of states across the country.
Well, and we were talking about actually the special session bills, which brings me to my first question, actually.
Sure.
Before we get into some of the bills, can you actually explain what a special session is for some of the people who just don't know?
Well, a special session, at the beginning of the legislative session, established the legislative calendar for the year, and that's our regular session. The governor can call the legislature into special session to deal with a particular issue that requires prompt and rapid attention. And the governor called us into special session at the when he was inaugurated on January 3rd, and has stayed into special session until just last week. And that special session was to deal with the budget and with jobs. Well, apparently the jobs parts of the special session didn't take, and so he's called another special session on jobs. The difference as far as the legislature is concerned is that floor sessions can be called at any time with a minimum amount of notice, and the normal procedures for legislative debate are thrown out the window, and so that you can really expedite legislation much more quickly. And this is where most of the damage occurred in the first special session. You know, the budget repair bill that had the union busting provisions in it and a number of the other bills were all done in special session. And that's why they were going through so fast. And that's why I felt it was necessary that we deny a quorum so that the public would have an opportunity to see what was in particular the union busting bill.
Well, and we don't have any bills like that this time around. But going through the bills, I mean, you've got bills that stop legislation for where you can't sue the drug companies. You have a bill in there from Governor Walker that says if you're going to be a Hollywood movie, you can only pay $500 instead of $5,000 or 2%. I mean, how do any of these bills help bring jobs into the state?
Well, that has been our complaint, Sarah, is that under the guise of a special session focused on job creation, in fact, there are a lot of other bills that really have nothing to do with that, but are more a part of an ongoing agenda to continue to make wealthier people wealthier and to give more breaks to corporations. And that was that was a large part of the first special session, and it looks like it's being included in the second one.
Are there any jobs in there that actually will help, or any bills in there, I'm sorry, that will actually help bring jobs in or create jobs or
there are. The governor's included some Democratic bills, ones that we introduced back in the beginning of the year. One in particular is, you know, we've heard from employers that they have jobs that they want to hire people, but there's people that don't have the skill set for those jobs. And so we've got a bill in there to enhance the training for these advanced employee skills to be able to get the training so the employers can hire them. In addition to which, we propose restoring funding to the technical colleges so that they can handle the significant increase in people looking to get the training so they can get new job skills. And we really need to focus on how you get people back to work, as opposed to how do you get, you know, the governor's position has always been, well, you give more tax breaks and spend more money to make for corporations and transfer wealth out of the middle class into the wealthy class, and then that somehow will create jobs. Well, it's never created jobs, and that's been a large part of our philosophical difference.
Do you think that the Democratic bills will actually get passed? Do you think there's going to be a fair shake this time around?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. You know, the governor's record has not been good in this, and it looks very much like it's a public relations move. But we're certainly interested in doing what we can and to work constructively towards an agenda that actually creates jobs in the state. And so I want to keep that opportunity and that option open, something we've been wanting to do since the beginning. And although it's now October, it's good that there's finally a renewed focus on what's really important.
Well, the Dems had several bills last special session, that dealt with jobs and job creation. Are you going to reintroduce any of those bills again into the session?
Most of those are introduced as regular session bills. There was really not a need for a special session except to sort of emphasize that this was a focus. But it turned out that the special session was more of a focus on a political power grab, than it was on jobs. And so what we saw was, you know, the job description to do one thing, and the actual bills that were introduced in it did something else. And this, we'll have to wait and see if that pattern is followed in this session, or if we can actually work in a bipartisan way on actual legislation that will help create jobs in the state for people that actually work.
Well, and the special session is being held in congruence with the regular session, isn't it?
It is. And that's not uncommon.
Okay.
We'll oftentimes have the legislation for the special session on the same day that we have legislation in the ordinary session. But the difference with the special session is you can take up bills at basically any time, and that you can expedite these because some of the normal parliamentary processes for deliberation and slowing a bill down are not available. So it's very attractive to the majority party to have bills in the special session because they can be much faster.
Yeah, but
a little bit faster.
But they already have the votes to pass these bills, though, don't they? So I'm not sure what the special session is needed for other than to quickly go through it, because I mean, I don't know how you guys
would
stop.
Traditionally, a special session is declared to try and put a focus on a particular issue or area that needs to have special focus. For example, we were talking earlier about the Great Lakes Compact. Governor Doyle called a special session to pass the Great Lakes Compact. But that was, that was a narrow focus. And most special sessions have that sort of narrow focus, maybe two or three bills. But in this administration, we've seen dozens of bills being introduced as special session bills.
Well, I'm going to move on a little bit to bipartisanship. Can Walker and the Fitzgerald brothers actually be believed in the rhetoric of them moving towards more bipartisanship?
Well, I think the proof will be in the actions. It's very apparent that both that the governor and the Republicans need to do some repair of their public perception. They have a very negative public perception of the way they've governed the state so far. And so I think they've realized they've stepped over the bounds and are trying to find a way to try and make themselves look better. But as I indicated to the governor and as I indicated to Senator Fitzgerald, is that really the proof will be in the pudding, and whether or not we actually see a change or whether or not the same old patterns continue.
Well, where does bipartisanship fit in with in the state legislature?
Well, Sarah, actually, as a substantial number of bills that are passed on a bipartisan basis, but there's major philosophical differences in some of the ways that we try to accomplish the public good and how we pursue. The Democrats have always been huge supporters of public education and in a fair deal for the average working man and woman in the state, so that if times are tough, that we share the sacrifices that are needed, but if when times get better, that we all prosper together. And the Republicans have always have had this philosophy that you enhance benefits to the wealthiest and corporations, and somehow that will trickle down to the rest of us. Well, we have seen that effort for the last 70 years has been a failed policy. And so we hope that we can encourage the governor and the Republican majority to look at how do we benefit the ordinary working men and women in the state, because they certainly have done a lot of damage to them in their first 6 months.
Well, and this partisanship is really hurting Wisconsin. We're separated on so many levels where we weren't 2 years ago. How can we change that? How can we fix what's going on?
Well, one of the real challenges we face is that there is a cadre of very wealthy industrialists. I think the most notorious is are the Koch brothers, who have funded some of these right-wing think tanks that have provided a whole agenda and have trained a cadre of acolytes to do their bidding, who have invested heavily in campaigns, to the point where they have a whole army of elected officials who are now pursuing their agenda and who are propagating it over the airwaves. And so, and they brook very little rational thought. You hear it all the time, particularly on talk radio and on some broadcast or on some cable television channels, of just really hearing an agenda that talks about how government can never succeed and is really undermining our ability to govern ourselves. And, I think one of the challenges is that the way we finance our campaigns leads to that kind of political campaigns that are so dependent on high money as opposed to the kind of dialogue that would be helpful in terms of how deciding how to go forward in public policy. And with the advent of the internet and blogs, some of which are extraordinarily irresponsible, it's a challenge to figure out how we go forward.
So, in your opinion, the best way to really try to bring things together is just to get rid of Citizens United and to get more public financing for campaigns and take back that aspect of it?
I think that's very, that would be an important element. I don't think it is the only thing. I don't think that just that by itself would do it. I think we also need to look at the folks who are running for office and look to those who are really devoted to the public welfare as opposed to the welfare of an elite few. And it has to be more than just lip service. You have to judge folks by how they actually have performed. And I think that's where oftentimes we fail. I mean, it's a responsibility. We are a democracy. And this, unfortunately, the huge sums of money that are thrown into the political system has distorted our ability to be able to govern ourselves. But I'm encouraged by the fact that so many of Wisconsin citizens have recognized that they need to take our destiny, our future destiny, into our own hands and govern ourselves, and I have great hopes for the future.
We're talking to Senator Mark Miller. If you have any questions, you could call in at 310-742-1896. Now, there is a mining committee that the Republicans have already, they've already put all their people on, and you just released the names of the Dems on the committee. Can you let us know who they will be and how they'll help shape this committee?
You want the names of all the committee members?
No, just the Dems. I know who the four Republicans are.
The Democrats are the ones that I nominated. There was a brief time when the majority leader had indicated he was not going to accept my nominations, but he has now. And the nominee and the appointments will be Senator Jouk, Senator Urbanbach, and Senator Carpenter. You know, the mining bill is a statewide issue, which is going to affect the entire state, and so it's important to have folks from around the state. And the Republican members are also from around the state. Well, it's kind of surprising. None of them are from the area where these mines are going to be actually built. Senator Jelks is the Democrat that I nominated to the committee. Will have the proposed mine that's being considered would be in his district.
Yeah, I was going to say that Senator Kedzie, who is the chair of that, is my senator, and his district touches Illinois.
Right, right.
So I found that very interesting. Why did you end up nominating those three? Is there something in particular of each one that other than obviously Senator Jouk was an obvious because it's in his district that they're putting the mine in, but Senator Carpenter, Senator Urbanbach, what was it about them that said you guys would be perfect to sit on this committee?
Well, both of these are experienced legislators with a wide range of legislative experience. They know how to work to find common ground, but they are also very much dedicated to the fact that we have a very valuable natural resource in the state of Wisconsin that attracts thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to our state every year, and that this is important not only for us who live here, but also to our economy, in that we shouldn't be sacrificing one economic sector for something that is going to last us for a long time. So our economy and our natural resources are very important, and both Senator Urbanbach and Senator Jouk and Senator Carpenter recognize that. Eastern Wisconsin is where a lot of our manufacturing is located, many of those manufacturers are located in Senator Carpenter's district, and Senator Urbanbach, of course, has a long history of being very protective of Wisconsin's natural resources.
Now, why exactly did this committee be formed? I mean, are they looking at it? Is this the committee that's going to say, here's the new mining bill?
Well, it's only a Senate committee, and normally we have standing committees, a natural resources committee that would normally be considering the bill, but I think the reason for the creation of the special committee was to actually draft the legislation, and so they created a special committee for that purpose, and then that will hold the public hearings and report the recommendations out. Oftentimes the legislation is drafted is drafted before it's sent to a committee. In this case, I think the committee was created to actually draft it, draft the legislation.
Okay, and who formed this? Whose idea was this for this committee?
I believe it was Senator Fitzgerald's idea. It may have been the governor's, but I don't know. But Senator Fitzgerald informed me that it was his intention to form the select committee and to for this specific piece of legislation, which is a proposed mining bill. Now, you might remember there was an earlier draft of a proposed mining bill. It was never introduced, but it was circulated, and it was a disaster in terms of undermining all the public protections we have in our current law. We have a good, strong mining law that's been in effect for over 40 years. It's been modified from time to time, and mining is going on under that law, but there are protections and processes to ensure that the public interest, including protecting our groundwater and our natural resources and our tourism assets, are all considered. And so there's not, you know, other than the fact that this mining company, which, by the way, has a terrible record both as an employer and as a mining company, I think is blackmailing the state into saying they're not going to do the mining unless we significantly weaken our environmental laws. Now, so I'm hopeful that this committee will recognize that they have a responsibility to the entire state and to our natural resources, and will, if they put forward a bill, will be one that recognizes that.
Well, Walker already has bills out there that have taken away protection for water, and he's got bills out there for air. How much more does he want to strip from the national resources?
Well, yeah, and that's our concern is that, you know, there are bills on here that look like they're going to greatly undermine our natural resource protection. There's for example, there was included a wetland bill with no Wisconsin was the first state to assume responsibility for regulating isolated wetlands when the Supreme Court said the federal government didn't have that authority. And so now there is a bill to revise that legislation, and we don't know what's in it yet because it hasn't been introduced. And so that's one of those bills that we were talking about among the some two dozen bills that were put on the agenda by the governor for the special session are ones like this one that really have nothing to do with job creation but may have a lot to do with undermining our natural resource protection.
Well, I'm going to get back to the special session in a moment, but the Republicans have a 4-3 majority. The Dems have three. They obviously have four people sitting on it. Do you think that the Dems are going to be heard on this committee at all? I mean, that's a fear of mine because the lack of bipartisanship seen throughout the rest of the session so far.
Well, all of the committee members are veteran legislators. I have some confidence that they'll be able to work together to put together legislation that will serve the best interests of the state. But I think the proof will be in what actually happens. It's still early. You know, I'm going to be an optimist that it can happen. But we'll see how it develops.
Okay, now getting back to the special session, I know you and Representative Barca did a press conference and said that a lot of the bills had the Legislative Reference Bureau numbers still. Have you been able to get any of those bills since you did the conference? Because you said a lot of those they hadn't even seen
no,
yet.
No, there's none that have been introduced since that time. None that I'm aware of have been introduced so that we have a chance to look at what the actual substance is. We just have sort of a brief description of what they are.
So they could pretty much have anything thrown in them and you would have no idea.
Well, we know what the subject matter is, at least on the bills, but, you know, this doesn't have to be a conclusive list. They could add any legislation at any time to this list, which is what happened in the first special session. So, but it's a long list for a special session. As I indicated earlier, usually a special session is very focused, but we have bills on here that have some relationship to job creation and business development, but we also have a lot that have really very little to do with that. So we'll have to see what is the pattern that evolves from this new special session on jobs.
And I know you mentioned ALEC before. How many of these bills that are in the special session are actually from ALEC or have ALEC references in them?
I think there's three. I know the pharmacy bill is one of them, and the bill on let me see if I can. There is the one on the trespassing bill is based on an ALEC model, and the limiting the liability for drug manufacturers. And then I mentioned earlier the one on limiting judgments in certain civil cases. Those all came out of the American Legislative Exchange list of bills. Now, are you familiar with this organization and how it operates? It's basically a group of industrialists that have created an opportunity to train legislators, and it is a very powerful kind of lobbying. It's not called lobbying; it's called education. But they have a staff and they have a they develop model legislation. It's been going on for over 30 years, and it's been having an increasing influence. They've put people out on the media network. You oftentimes hear them, or people from the Heritage Institute or the Cato Institute, which are related, and to promote their agenda. And it's been an effective thing, and it is a thing that's funded by big industrial companies in the U.S. and they use this as a way to advance an industrial agenda, or at least the agenda of people like the Koch brothers.
Which leaves us out of the loop altogether.
I'm sorry?
Which leaves the people, the people.
Oh, yeah, no, people are not are definitely not included in that. And it has, you know, it's just now starting to become. People are starting to become aware of this organization and its influence because it has had increasing influence over the last 30 years and particularly in the last 10.
And you're seeing it in Wisconsin. They've done a lot of bills in Wisconsin.
Oh, sure. The union busting bill has always been on their agenda. And the other one is to attack the ability of people who are damaged by equipment materials that have to be able to recover damages that they suffer as a result of bad equipment or bad materials that they have used. So that's an ALEC piece of legislation, and there were several in that first session that came out of it. And you also saw it, you know, in Ohio, which has gotten so much attention. You know, they had a union busting bill in Ohio, which the citizens of Ohio rose up and got the signatures necessary to be able to put that bill on a referendum, which is an avenue we don't have here in Wisconsin. The only way we have here in Wisconsin to call elected officials accountable when they overreach is the recall process.
Which they're trying, that the Republicans are trying to write a bill to make that more difficult as well.
That's what we've heard.
So I have a question from the chat room. Ice Fisher wants to know, does our state constitution say anything about separation of powers so that giving Walker the power to deny rules is illegal?
You know, I haven't studied that part of the Constitution. The Constitution does give the legislature the policymaking authority and the tax-raising authority. The executive is supposed to be able to execute the policy that the legislature passes. And what happened, that was a huge transfer of power from the legislative branch to the governor's office, and I am just dumbfounded that Republicans legislators were willing to do this. Is oftentimes when we pass legislation, we create the requirement for a state agency to develop rules to implement that legislation, to work out the details, and details that can be modified easily from time to time without having to necessarily go through separate legislation. But whenever those rules are before they can become effective, they have to be come back to the legislature, who then the standing committee that with that responsibility for that area makes a determination of whether or not the rules are congruent and consistent with the public policy that was adopted. What was done in the first special session was to transfer almost all of that authority over to the governor, who has to pass on the acceptability of the developed rules before they ever come to the legislature. So he basically has been put into that policy-making role, that very substantial transfer of power from the legislature to the governor.
That floored me when they did that, actually. I couldn't.
Yeah, me too. You know, when I could not imagine the Democrats ever doing that for a Democratic governor. It's just an amazing. And one of the things that you know is once you transfer power like that, it's very hard to get it back.
Yeah, most people, once they have power, they don't like to give it up. They're like, oh, you want part of your fair share? Sure, I'll give you some of mine. It doesn't normally work that way.
That's exactly right.
So, well, we have just a few minutes left. You guys have started a radio broadcast, you and Representative Barca, I should say, and you guys do this once a week. Can you talk about that for just a moment?
Yes. We see this as an opportunity to provide information to the public in addition to the way that we've normally done it through press releases and so forth. It's new, and we're hopefully that it'll serve its purpose of giving radio listeners an opportunity to hear from additional sources about public policies that are confronting the legislature. So I hope it works.
Well, where can people listen to it? Is it something if their radio station doesn't play it, is there somewhere online they can listen to that?
Yes, I believe it'll be online, and I wish I had that detail for you right now. If you can look it up on the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association website to find out which stations will be carrying it, and it's also available it's available through the website.
Okay, through the broadcaster's website?
Yeah, through the broadcaster's website, and I'm not sure exactly the day it's a Thursday. I think Thursday is the day the new broadcasts go on.
Okay. What I'll do then is I'll look that up, and I'll post it on my Facebook page for anyone who's interested. They can go on
Great.
The Sarah Schultz Show Facebook page and get
Great.
That information, because it's important that you guys get your voice heard. So.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for your help with that. You know, this is one of the things about the modern electronic era is that we have the lots of opportunities for information, and that's both good and it can be really severely abused. And so, what I've heard from your program is that you're providing information that's going to be helpful to the people that hear it.
That's my hope. I'm hoping I could get the voices out there that don't have another place to go, and there's not a lot of places in the state of Wisconsin you can get this type of news.
That's right.
So, well, thank you so much for being on today, Senator Miller. I hope we can have you back again sometime soon.
My pleasure, Sarah. I look forward to it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. You enjoy that football game and enjoy a beautiful day.
Yeah. Well, I have to watch it on TV. There's no way I could afford a ticket.
I'm in the same boat. I'm going to stream it online and see if I can get a good shots there. So.
All right. Well, go Badgers.
Exactly. Go Badgers.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Senator Mark Miller, who is the minority leader in the Wisconsin Senate. After this break, I'll be back with Wendy Strout from Emerge.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. For millions of workers across America, family paychecks have declined or stagnated to such an extent that real median household income was lower in 2010 than it was in 1997, according to Census Bureau numbers. The AFL-CIO says it's time to end the failed economic experiment of lowering taxes on the rich, dismantling regulations on business, and following NAFTA-like global trade policies, because that has only led to an unequal economy that only works for the very richest Americans. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says there's an urgent need for Congress to pass President Obama's American Jobs Act. With a record 46.2 million Americans in poverty, Weingarten says is a terrible impact on families, kids, and schools. Weingarten says that with families struggling to find jobs and to overcome economic hardship, schools can be a source of stability for families and communities and a place where students and their parents can get the services they need to have a chance at success. The AFT says nearly two-thirds of school staff across the country report they are regularly seeing kids having trouble in school because of hunger. So to end high joblessness and reduce poverty, the AFL-CIO says we need family-sustaining jobs, more investments in our futures, and fair taxation. Who would applaud a mass firing of workers? Jesse Russell lets us know.
When President Ronald Reagan made the decision to fire thousands of air traffic controllers in August of 1981 for continuing a strike, few saw it as a reason to celebrate. Tuesday night, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie gave a speech at Reagan Library and gave his recollection of the 1981 incident. And when he mentioned the mass firing by Reagan, the audience broke out in applause. The cheering comes at a time when the unemployment rate stands at 9% in the United States, and budget cuts by Republicans have resulted in more than 500,000 additional job losses for public sector employees.
Will the third time be the charm for R.J. Reynolds tobacco workers seeking union representation? A secret ballot vote will be held at two of the company's North Carolina plants to determine if workers want to be represented by the International Association of Machinists. The vote is expected at the end of October. This newscast made possible in part by the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. This is what democracy looks like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back. I'd like to welcome Wendy Strout, who is the Executive Director from Emerge, to the Sarah Schultz Show. Wendy is the Executive Director for Emerge and has been working in Democratic policy since 1992. She has worked on congressional races in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and Arkansas in various roles, including Finance Director. She has also worked as a fundraiser in 2002 for Governor Doyle's successful gubernatorial campaign. Wendy has also worked as a political organizer for AFSCME in Southeast Wisconsin, where she also coordinated several labor coalitions. Before joining Emerge Wisconsin, Wendy served as a director for the Wisconsin Civic Engagement Project, now Wisconsin Voices. So thank you for coming on the show today, Wendy.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Well, I'm really excited. I love Emerge, and I think it's a phenomenal program. So I'm going to start out today with asking, letting you talk about more about what Emerge is.
Well, Emerge Wisconsin is part of Emerge America. We are the premier training program for Democratic women. We inspire them to run, we hone their skills to win, and it's an in-depth 70-hour training program where we train women who have an interest in running for office, and we only train Democratic women. We are, like I said, we're a 70-hour training program, and we are based in California, we're based in Oregon, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Massachusetts, Maine, Kentucky, and, of course, Wisconsin. And nationally, we're looking to expand to other states, including Michigan, Georgia, Colorado, Maryland, Ohio, and New York, just to name a few.
So you guys are really starting to spread out into the country more.
We are. And we, you know, the reason that we exist is to address the underrepresentation of women at all levels of government. I mean, I know we all know the numbers in Congress. You know, 17% of women are representing us in Congress, which, you know, women are 50% of the population in America. And even in Wisconsin, we have, we increased our numbers to 25% of the women of the state legislature are represented, are women. At the local level, we, you know, it's not good either. We have 15% of our city councils have no women, and 4% of our county boards have no women. And that may seem like a small number, but if you look at the number of seats statewide, so like at city councils, there's over 1,400 city council seats statewide. Only 322 of those seats are held by women. And at the county level, there's almost 1,700 county board seats across the state of Wisconsin, and only 308 are held by women. You know, and it's not any better at the town board level. Three-quarters of the town boards have no women. You know, and this is all across the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, these are numbers that we've gotten from the Wisconsin Women's Council, which we quote religiously. They do the studies to show how much, you know, where women are in elected office. And, you know, it shows that we have a long way to go. And so what Emerge does, you know, we've been around since 2007. And what we do is we talk to women and recruit women across the state and, you know, ask them to run. We encourage them to run, and we train them. We have a 70 hours of training, typically one weekend a month here in Wisconsin. And we teach women, you know, different areas, like how to, you know, being a candidate, you know, how do you put your campaign plan together? You know, we teach them different areas of how to fundraise. We teach them how to develop their message. And, you know, when a woman graduates from our program, she's got, you know, significant amount of training. She's got the confidence because she knows how to be a candidate. And we also, you know, but, you know, additionally, these women are building these solid relationships with their classmates, which is, again, another support system that these women have developed being a part of our program. And these classmates cross the state to help each other run for office, which is, you know, in 2010, I don't think there was a woman that was running for state office that did not have an Emerge alumni working on her campaign. I mean, these are women that are, if they're not running, they're helping other women run. And then we have women, you know, when women graduate from our program, they join this growing legion of Democratic women who are trained by us. You know, right now we have over 75 women who are in our alumni. And these women help each other, you know, they're committed to helping each other run for office. I know, for example, Senator Jessica King, who is one of our alumni, had other alumni coming to help her with her campaign.
Wow, that says a lot about your program, that the women who are part of it, even if they're not running, they're helping other people run.
Exactly. I mean, Emerge women are committed, you know, they're committed to helping other women run. I mean, they're helping, committed to getting Democrats elected, because that's what it's about, but it's also they're committed to helping other women other Democratic women get elected as well. And, you know, we have women who have gone through our program who are waiting and ready to run for office. And it's waiting for that right time and waiting for the right seat to run for office. And we're excited about our alumni and excited about the women who we've trained in our program. Some of them include Senator Jessica King. We've also trained, Representative Penny Bernard Shaver from the Appleton area, Representative Jocasta Zamarripa from the Milwaukee area, and she actually, you know, is the first Latina to serve in the legislature. But we also have a lot of women that are in local office as well. At least 7 of our alumni are county supervisors. I know Tara Johnson is a county board chairwoman from La Crosse County. We have several women who are on the city council across the state, several who are also on the school board across the state. And so we are working with women, and we train them to run at all levels of government, you know, town boards, village boards, school boards, city councils, county boards, state legislature. You know, we train them, and our training, you know, works with each, you know, work, you know, and we train women at all levels of government to run at different levels of government, and we hone our training so that, you know, so that it's relevant to each of the races.
Well, how did Emerge get started? How did this idea get going?
Well, it actually started nationally in California, and you know, it, you know, because, you know, even though California has these great women senators, they have, you know, there's, again, it's, you know, the, you know, local offices, there's not as, there were, you know, not, you know, they needed to address the same thing that we all do, is the underrepresentation of women. And so we, they started this training program there, and then it just grew to Arizona, and then just kind of grew across the state as Emerge America. And we, and it came to Wisconsin in 2007. There was a group of women who came together and realized that we needed something like Emerge Wisconsin here to, you know, to really address the underrepresentation of women. I mean, we, just in our state legislature, we've never broken 30%. At our highest level, we had, and we've actually, we had 28% of the legislature were women. And that includes Democrats and Republican women. But we are, of course, much more interested in electing Democratic women, because we are shamelessly big D Democrat. We are all about electing Democratic women.
Well, why should there be more women in the legislature?
Well, it's, I mean, there should be women at all levels of government. I mean, women are 50% of the population. And, you know, women bring different perspectives and different voices to the issues. You know, it's, and I think we, you know, we, it's a nice balance of voices and a nice mixture of voices when we have more women and more women's perspectives in office, you know, in making policy, making policy decisions.
And what is the highest seat your graduates have won in elections?
Senator Jessica King is, I would say, our highest in Wisconsin.
Well, what about the country? And all of Emerge, what's some of the highest positions that then?
I mean, I would say that it's just, I mean, we have women that are at the state, you know, state senate level. We have women who've been appointed to different commissions. I don't have the full list of alumni and their electeds, but we've had, you know, we've trained nationally 700 women. 43% of those women have run for office or been appointed to boards or commissions, and 55% of our candidates have won their elections.
That's a really high election success rate.
Yeah, and I mean, because it's a, you know, we, you know, I think we can, you know, we confidently say that, you know, we have a great product. I mean, Emerge trains women and gives them all of the tools, and we expand their network. And we have, you know, we have professionals come in and do the training, you know, people who were in the field, people who, you know, consultants, people who've done this job. And these are women, these are people that women can go to for advice. You know, they may even want to hire them in the future. But it's building those relationships, and it's, you know, that's a key part of what we do, along with the training aspect. And it's a very intensive training. Ask any of our alumni, we have, you know, they'll say it's a very intensive 7-month training. But
well,
it's well worth it.
Can you go through some of the things that you gave some basics, but can you go through maybe what one of the sessions would be if you were to go?
Well, we typically start on a Friday night training, and we go, and then we'll do it overnight and have a Saturday all day training. We will typically have you know, like a panel discussion, or we'll have, you know, like for, you know, like a dinner and discussion with, you know, different elected officials. We have several alumni that come in and do some of our trainings as well, those who run for office, those who are in office. We also have many of our advisors that come in and participate in our panel discussions. We actually just had one of our advisors, County Supervisor Marina Dmitrievich at our last training. And so, you know, so we'll do a Friday night training where we have panels, we have workshop discussions, we have group activities, depending on the weekend. And then, you know, we take care of the food. We feed our all of our program members. And if they need housing, we help find them housing with supporter housing, with many with our alumni and with our board. And then the next morning, we start early with, again, the same, you know, we do different workshops, different group activities. We have people come in, do different presentations, and a lot, you know, it's all to, and it's, you know, it's very informative and gives them every aspect that they need to know about running for office.
When you're, I'm looking for my note here. Here we go. when your candidates, when the people who graduate, your graduates, do they feel comfortable running for higher office? I mean, do you say start with a local, move up, or do they say, you know what, I'm so comfortable because of where what I've learned and where Emerge has put me, I'm just going to run for senator?
Well, I think it depends on each individual woman, you know, where it depends on, you know, what district she's in. It depends on, you know, her, I mean, when a woman comes through our program, she does not have to know what she wants to run for. You know, it's not a requirement that you have that you choose a seat. That it's like, yes, I'm going to run for this and be trained through your program. They come in knowing that they want to run for office. And sometimes it's, you know, I've had this discussion with women about going through our program, and they're like, you know, I like who represents me. I wouldn't run against them. And my answer to them is, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. You never know the person, you know, there may be somebody who retires or somebody who wants to run for a different office. And so, you know, it's just preparing women to run and being ready for the opportunity to run.
But they feel comfortable, though, going into any office. So if they're saying, you know what, my senator's retiring, I really want to run for the office, they would feel comfortable running for it even if they hadn't run for a lower office because of what Emerge has taught them and what they know from that program.
Yes, I mean, women feel confident in running at all levels of government. If that, yep. Yes, I mean, because we tailor the program. You know, we've had women run for Senate, you know, like Senator King. We've had women run for state assembly. In 2010, we had probably the most women we've had running in 1 year, including local and state elections. So, yes, women, you know, coming out of our program, they have the confidence, they have the tools that they need, they have the resources. And, you know, when they're, you know, done with our program, we don't just, you know, we continue to stay in touch with them. We have continual education opportunities, continual opportunities for them to stay connected. So when a woman graduates from our program, she doesn't just, we don't just say, okay, see you later, but there's continual updating and education that we try to provide for them.
Okay, now I have a question out of the chat. Moxie of Moxie says she knows someone here in Waukesha who plans to run for office next year, but she is turned down by Emerge. Can Emerge help her? Can she reapply maybe next time?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. This year we had, as you know, I mean, this year we had people who, let me go back. Typically our program runs from January through July in any given year, every year. That's typically what we run our program. That's how we ran our 2011 program. But because of everything that's happened in this state, you know, women really stepped up. Women stepped up and they ran, you know, they organized recall efforts. They, you know, were very involved with the protests, very involved with, you know, working on the recall elections. And women were ready, we're getting the sense that women were ready to run, and more women were inspired to run for office, wanting to run for office. And so we made the decision to move our program up to start in September of this year instead of January. We moved it up 4 months. So women who want to run next year, we you know, we want to make sure that they're trained and ready to rent to win. And so we had more applications this year than we've ever had. And we only have 25 spaces. So we had to make some tough choices this year, but we are continuing, you know, there's continual other training opportunities. We keep people informed about other opportunities. We will be doing a training program. Our next class will be in 2013. We have so many women who apply, and we always encourage them to apply again. Because it was very difficult decisions this year, as it always is.
Well, we're talking to Wendy Strout from Emerge. If you have any questions, you can call in at 310-742-1896. Now, I have another question from the chat room. It's from Jane, and she says, what is Emerge looking for in a candidate?
Well, there's a couple of requirements. There is, you know, you have to be a woman, you have to be a Democrat, and you have to plan on running for office at some point, in the near future. We encourage people who are planning on running sooner than later to apply. You know, if you're thinking of running like in 10 years, then you might want to wait a little bit longer before you apply. That way you have more of the, you know, it's closer to the time that you're about to run. You go to our website on how to apply. You look for community involvement, interest in running, participation in your community are just a few of the things that Emerge looks for when they go through the application process and go through the interview process. Because we actually do an application process, and then we do a series of interviews before we make our selection.
And going back to what you said, your next session will be 2013. Now, because you had so many people apply, after these 7 months are up, after the session that just started is over, do you think you would think about trying one in 2012 again?
Well, there's a lot of factors that will come into that. If we have the resources to do another program, definitely. That's the big thing, is just having the resources to do that. We would definitely look at that. We will also be doing, in absence of doing a 2012 program, I mean, that's not off the table, but again, we would definitely, there would be a lot of factors that would go into that. But we will be doing some training, we'll be doing some multiple trainings across the state, some of our boot camp trainings, geared towards women who are interested in running for office, and also giving people an idea of what, and what it is, what our program is like in just a short session. So we will be going around the state and doing more trainings. If we don't do a second 2012 training, we will be around the state doing some more other spot trainings and weekend trainings.
What are the costs involved with the Emerge program?
Well, the tuition itself is $350, but we understand that not everyone is, not everyone is able to afford that. So we provide financial scholarships for people who are, interested in running. We do not believe that money should be a factor in running, in getting ready to run for office. We will teach you how to raise money, but in going through our program, money shouldn't be a factor. But that is the tuition of people, is $350. It costs a lot more than that to train each woman. It's over $3,000 to actually train someone, but we raise that money through various sources in order so we can keep our costs low for these women. Because, again, we want to train women of all backgrounds, all, income levels. We are very committed to making sure women have the opportunity to be trained by Emerge and to run for office.
Well, how do women, if they want to get to your next session, how would they apply? And or if you had the boot camp, you're talking about the boot camp training, how could people apply for some of these boot camp trainings?
Well, one of the things, there's a couple things that they can do. One of the big things they can do is just shoot me an email. Is Wendy, W-E-N-D-Y, at emergewi.org. That's E-M as in Mary, E-R-G as in girl, E-W-I.org. And send me your name, your email, phone number, contact information, location, and let me know that you're interested in going through our program. And we will, I keep in touch with women who are interested or have been recommended to our program. I keep in touch with them, let them know when our applications are coming up, let them know when we're doing some workshops in their area. And if you know of a woman who is interested or who should be, whether they're interested or not, who should be running for office or who should be in our program, we also encourage you to contact us as well. We also have a newsletter, an email newsletter that goes out that you can subscribe to online. Just go to our website, which is emergewi.org, and there's a subscribe section, and you can sign up there. And we send out emails keeping people up to date about what our class is up to, what they've learned, how they, we also keep them up to date on our alumni and, where they're running and when they're running. Just so they know, kind of just to let them know what Emerge is up to and what our alumni are up to as well.
Is that where people would go to get more information on anything in the program, in the Emerge program?
Exactly. Our website is a great resource for, learning more about Emerge, learning more about Emerge America, learning more about the other states as well. We also are on Facebook, and just Emerge Wisconsin, and we're also on Twitter. Under EmergeWI. So we're also on LinkedIn as well. And so you can find us anywhere, and we will share information. We're constantly updating what's going on. We're very excited about, alumni who are running. We love to talk, about alumni that are making a difference. We talk about our program and how you can get more involved. And anybody can be involved with our program, as volunteers. We have different events that are coming up. And all that is, available via our website, email, Twitter, Facebook.
Is there a place people can donate as well if they want to do that?
They can definitely donate. On our website, you can also go to the contribute button. There's a contribute button at emergewi.org, and then hit and go and contribute. Because especially if you are interested in making sure that more Democratic women are running for office, and especially with more Democratic women running, you have more Democrats running. And if you want to support, have more Democrats in office, this is a great way to do it, by supporting the work that we do financially, by supporting the work that we do, by recruiting, helping us recruit other women. With our class, our current class right now, 60% of our class is from outside Milwaukee and Madison. And that's a significant jump from last year, from just a couple months ago, which was 40% of the women were from outside Dane and Milwaukee counties. And we're excited about the statewide impact that we're able to have at the local level and at the state level as well.
Well, I think you guys are doing a great job, and I was excited to see Jessica King win. I'm excited to see the people you have on your board. You've got she's not senator yet, Representative Tammy Baldwin. I'm sorry. I'm jumping the gun on that one there. But she's on your board. You've got some great women on your board. You've got a great program. And I'm really excited that you're in Wisconsin, that you're helping women, because we so need a woman's voice in the government. And I'm really excited that you could be on today.
Well, thank you for having me on. And we're all about, encouraging more women to run and making sure that they have the tools and the resources to run for office. And, we are excited about the successes we've had so far and continue to look forward to having even more successes with our future alumni. So,
well, thank you again so much for everything you're doing, and thanks for being on today, Wendy.
Thank you, Sarah.
Right. Have a good day now.
You too.
Thanks. Bye. That was Wendy Strout, and I'd like to thank her for coming on the Sarah Schultz Show today. She is the Executive Director of Emerge, and their website is www.emergewi.org. So it's emergewi.org. I will post that and all the other things that she mentioned on my Facebook page. So we'll get her email, we'll get the website, we'll get the Twitter page and the Facebook page, all on my Facebook page, The Sarah Schultz Show. So go there after the show and all that will be put on. We're going to have a little bit, another break, really quick break, and then after the break will be Frank Kane from Up North.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can grab off our website over at progressive.org. Congratulations to the Occupy Wall Street protesters. They've got the right target, that's for sure. It's the banks on Wall Street that brought our entire economy down, and they haven't had to pay a nickel for it, nor have their executives been charged with any crime, much less gone to jail. I also admire the tactics and the courage of these protesters. They've been demonstrating in the streets, which is where we need to be, and they've stood up to disgusting police brutality and have broadcast it via YouTube to the whole world. It's more true now than ever that the whole world is watching, as some of the protesters chanted, though the corporate media sure ignore it. Protests like this, and like the one that 350.org held at the White House a few weeks ago over the tar sands pipeline, are a healthy sign that people are finally rising up. We saw such a sign in Madison, Wisconsin in February and March, and we're going to see another sign next week in Washington, D.C., as people engage in more civil disobedience to protest the 10th anniversary of the Afghan War. People can only take so much, and this rising up, tardy as it is a welcome sight. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I don't think the Obama administration made a wise move to appeal health care reform directly to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the decision to do so underlines the original sin that Obama committed on this issue. That sin was to take Medicare for All off the table, and even to take Medicare for All who want it off the table. Neither of those two options would have compelled anyone to buy a product from some private company, which is the crux of the legal challenge. And anyway, Medicare for All, or all who want it, would have been far preferable to the option Obama settled on, which is the insurance company enriching option. Going to the Supreme Court could also backfire on Obama. First of all, it'll keep this highly divisive law front and center during the coming election season, and more Americans actually want to repeal the law than uphold it. And secondly, to put any trust whatsoever in the Roberts Court seems foolhardy. This is the single most reactionary Supreme Court we've had in at least 75 years. To expect it to endorse any program that expands the safety net is taking a huge chance. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Well, welcome back. And Frank hasn't called in yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over the stories I know he was going to mention. And in about 15 minutes from now, we are going to have the Occupy Chicago on. So if Frank calls in by that time, I will definitely get him on. I know he travels around the state a lot, and he just might be in an area that he just doesn't have cell phone service. So these are stories that are actually coming from up north. And the idea about it is that I noticed that being in the southern part of the state, you know, I never get to hear news from what's going on in the northern half of the state. So that's what this segment is going to really do. It's going to help bring Wisconsin together. So with that being said, I'm going to try to do my best to get some of these news stories out here. The first story is that the Whalen recall is going on. Now, the Ashland mayor, I believe his name is Bill Whalen, is being recalled. And the date is set. It's still going on. There's still, I'm not sure exactly who's running against him. I'm assuming he does have someone running against him because they do have a recall date already set and ready to go. But that's still going on. That's still up there. Now, the second thing is that Weatherfield folded. Weatherfield itself is a company, I believe they manufactured doors and windows. I believe that's how it went. They're a manufacturing company up in the northern part of the state. Well, unfortunately, they are closing their doors, and that is going to affect 125 to 150 people, which is, that's a pretty hard hit for up north. They're already struggling with jobs up there, and losing those jobs, and those are manufacturing jobs. So we're talking about sustainable jobs here. We're talking about jobs that they're not your $8 an hour, maybe I can make my rent this month, and hopefully I don't have to eat. These are jobs that are putting money back into the economy. People are living, you know, may not be living well, but they're living comfortably. They're making payments. They probably have nice, decent cars. They can afford food, that kind of thing. They're gone. And that's hard. That's hard to do when you're looking at unemployment rates up there. I know Menominee has a 20% unemployment rate, and I know some of the places up north are at 10% unemployment rates. So that's a hard hit when it comes to the jobs up north. Now, there's a bunch of updates on the mining. The first update is the County Mining Committee. Now, the Ashland County Mining Committee, and I think they're part of the board, but don't quote me on that one, but the Mining Committee actually put a resolution through saying that mining was okay, that it's okay, you can mine, which is interesting because the town of Anderson, which sits right in the Pinoki Mountain Range, the town of Anderson is actually just passed a resolution saying, you know what, we're not gonna allow any mining. So you have the county saying, yes, we are mining. You have a town in the county saying, no, we're not going to allow mining, and they passed the town board passed that resolution. So there's going to be some problems. And I believe I have Frank on the line. Hey, Frank, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, other than phone connections. It's a pleasant day up here, a little cloudy, but we're getting ready for the weekend, so it's always nice.
Well, and that's what I told him. I said, you travel around, and there's some places that don't have good phones, so I was just waiting till you called in. Well, I did kind of cover a little bit. I covered the Whalen recall, a little bit on the Weatherfield going down, and I was just starting on the mining update. So I just kind of covered the Ashland and Town of Anderson, so I'm just going to let you go with the mining update.
Okay. Well, the mining update is the Ashland City or the county board, the Ashland County Board Ad Hoc Committee, voted to recommend to the full county board that they would rescind their motion supporting the mine. Now, the variety of reasons why, but I think the compelling reason seemed to be that one of the chairman of the committee, Pete Russell, said we really shouldn't have done it because they really didn't get enough information from the people and that they hadn't done their homework. So they're going to go back to the Ashland County Board and I think ask them to rescind their motion supporting responsible mining and then probably start the process over again. It's mainly indicative of just how controversial this project has become. And I think that controversy is growing because more and more people are becoming aware of exactly the scope of this whole project. And basically, we're looking at changing the face of small communities and two townships in northern Wisconsin forever. Once people understand that the ultimate goal here is a 22-mile-long strip mine, a mile and a half wide with 30 to 50, 60 years of explosions daily, the enthusiasm is waning rapidly. So back with the background that the company really isn't coming forth with any meaningful information, they don't answer questions, and of course there's nothing on the table. We've got a committee that was put together by the Senate that has, you know, at best, I think it's kind of hard to figure out what their goal is. And, of course, the mining company probably has their latest proposal to change Wisconsin laws on the table in the governor's office. And now I think the strategy is to go back to pushing the jobs for generations and jobs, 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 Frank, water issues back.
Let's get back to the Ashland County Mining Committee here, or the Ashland County Board. So the county board passed a resolution saying to mine?
The county board passed a resolution saying they would support responsible mining.
Okay, support responsible mining.
And that was actually tantamount to saying we're going to support mining. I mean, those responsible mining resolutions are just thinly disguised. We support mining. And they get translated by WMC and the mining companies and so on.
Okay, and the town of Anderson, now they're in the, where is the town of Anderson?
The town of Anderson is in Iron County, and it's right on the border between Iron and Ashland County, and it's in the heart of the Pinokies, and reports are that they have passed a resolution saying we're opposed to mining, which is pretty huge. Also, the town of Sanborn has done the same thing and said that they're opposed to mining. So there's even, you know, support coming from local government in terms of speaking out. And as this unfolds, it'll be, I think we'll see more local government. I think WWF, Wisconsin Wildlife Conservation, George Myers' group came out with a pretty direct statement saying they're opposed to mining up here because the area is so precious. So as time goes on, more and more people are signing on to no mining, and the reason is that they can't do it environmentally safe.
Now, where is the town of Sanborn at?
The town of Sanborn is actually up in the Bad River, within the confines of the Bad River Reservation, and it is probably the largest township in the Bad River watershed. And their motion was actually aimed at protecting the water.
Okay, so they would be really hard hit then if this mine came through.
They would be really hard hit if the mine comes through, because all of the water in the watershed, well, not all the water, but I'd say probably 99% of the water in the watershed ends up in a Bad River, and that spills into Lake Superior, flows through the Bad River Ojibwe homeland, and through the Kakagan sloughs into Lake Superior. So that is really the you know, the epicenter of where people would really be affected by the mine.
Now, I know we do a lot. I talk a lot about the mine. Is the mine the big thing with people up in the north? I mean, what else? Is there something that they're talking about? Is the mine the thing they're talking about? I mean, it affects almost everyone up in the northern part of the state, doesn't it?
I think it is the topic of conversation, and it has spurred the people over in Barron County that are dealing with the sand removal, and the folks up in the UP that are working with their mining issues. We're actually looking at putting together towards the end of October a rather massive meeting of getting everyone at the table and saying, okay, here's what's going on in my area, here's what's going on here, and we want to paint a picture of what's happening across the south shore of Lake Superior, and certainly in the Bad River or in the Lake Superior watershed. And, of course, we hope to travel on up into Canada with that, because it's absolutely a resource war up here. I mean, there's no other way to define it. And when you start infusing the cash that's going into this whole project, it's like any other war. The first casualty is always truth. And that's where we are right now, is let's get the word out here. We don't have to preach to people. We just have to get the information and let them draw their own conclusions.
Okay,
and
now...
Go ahead.
All right. With that being said, I was just talking to Senator Miller, and we have the three Dems on the committee. We have the four Republicans on this mining committee that they have. That was Senator Fitzgerald's idea. How does it bode with the people up north that a whole but one of the senators are from the southern part of the state? You know, the chair has the district. It's actually my district. That district touches the Illinois border. How are the people up north looking at that and seeing that?
Well, I think most people are looking at it with a jaundiced eye, or B, nothing's going to happen and nothing's going to change. You know, you go down that whole list of senators, and I think we've got Tim Carpenter, who, you know, he seems to have a voting record that shows concerns for the environment. And John Erpenbach, you know, our analysis there is we think he's actually going to listen. Bob Jauch, I think he's trying to negotiate something. I think he's trying to put a face on this that everyone can live with. So I think in the analysis at the end, he'll vote against it. Zipper and Cowles and Schultz and Kedzie, they're not going to change your mind. I mean, I don't think anybody up here is naive enough to think that Dale Schultz has been a long-term supporter of the mine. He was up here 5-6 years ago with Dave Zien when Dave Zien was a senator talking about what a great deal a mine would be for northern Wisconsin. All of the Republicans on the committee are 100% to 93 to 100% supporters of WMC have been lockstep with Jobs for Generations. So I don't think that we will have some meaningful discussion. People will talk to the committee, but I don't think anybody is going in there with any idea that a bipartisan committee could possibly come out of Madison that would make any difference. Well, these guys are from none of them live in a rural area. You know, they're all from down the southern part of the state, and they really need to come up and spend a week here walking through the Pinokies and finding out exactly what's going on. And we'll be lucky if we get the full committee to come up here and have a hearing, if they have hearings up here at all.
Okay. I'm going to move on a little bit. On October 25th, there's something going on. Can you talk about that for a second?
On October 26th?
25th. It's KBIC.
Oh, yes, on the 25th. Yes, we're going to meet over in Baraga, Michigan at the KBIC housing, and it will be a collection of the Minnesota or the Michigan mining people up in UP, those organizations, and they have invited myself to come over to sit down, and we are hoping to start a regional response to what's going on up here with mining. Right now, everyone is kind of fighting a good battle by themselves, and we're going to explore the ways that we can work together. And actually, we have been working together for quite a while. It's just now, I think, the dynamics are such that we're talking to the same people, we're talking to the same companies, that we need to sit down at the table and start just comparing strategies and what we're doing. And looking forward to that, and it'll probably take us a couple days.
If people, is that open to everybody, or is that just a...
Well, I think right now, to be real honest, there will be two meetings. I think one of them is fairly open. I'm not exactly certain about that. But then there will be a smaller group meeting of some of us that are... you know, have been kicking this thing around for quite a few years and have known each other, and we kind of want to sit down and talk about how we can strategize, what we've done in the past, do a quick review of what worked, and look at, build into this is now, and we need to prepare for now, and we need to get people up to speed on Facebook and on web pages and on internet usage and those kinds of things that, you know, we're sort of all over the place. We a lot of people up here still have dial-up, and it really doesn't work well. We don't have good cell phone coverage. So we need to figure out a way that we can have one contact to get information out to people instantly, and I think that'll be basically the, you know, a major part of that meeting.
Now, I have about a minute left. Why don't you talk about the thing you're doing, the Hootenanny in the Hills that's going on this weekend?
Weekend, starting tonight, we're going to have a Hootenanny in the Pinocchio Hills, a camp-in. We've got people coming from southern Wisconsin. We've got people coming from Michigan. We're going to set up we have the Copper Falls State Park, a group camp rented. We've got people bringing tomorrow evening. We'll have chili. The tribal chairman, Wiggins, is going to come out at around 12:30, 1 o'clock, and make a presentation. After that, we have three people that are going to take tours of the actual mine site. They'll take people out on tour. If people don't want to walk, they'll do a driving tour with to some of the falls and some of the rivers and some of the lakes. We've got a 10-passenger van we can use to shuttle people around. And that will be, and then in the evening we're going to all have some music and spend some time reviewing what's happened here, not a lot of time. And we want to get the people, the participants, to sit down and do some brainstorming as to what they think they can do in their area. And then we will kind of tell them what we think they can do to help us out. And
if people want more information on this, where can they go?
The best thing to do right now would be to call 218-341-8822. That's 218-341-8822. Or check the website SaveTheWatersEdge.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Frank. Thanks for coming on today and telling us what's going on up north.
Well, it was my pleasure, and thank you.
All right. Well, good luck. Have fun, the Hootenanny, and I'll talk with you next week then.
I'll look forward to that.
All right. Bye. That was Frank Kane. We got a new segment called From Up North, and as you can hear, the mine is a huge, huge deal up north. That's why I keep talking about it. We don't hear about it down here, but it's going to affect a lot of people in a lot of ways. So it's something that they're talking about up north and something I'll continue to talk about down here. Now I have a very patient Mark Banks with me today. He's with Occupy Chicago, and he's on the line to finish out the show with us. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having
Good.
Me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for being on. Now, can you explain Occupy Chicago?
Sure. Just before I begin, let me say I'm also with my friend Daniel Masoglio here. He's going to do the interview with me over there.
Hey, welcome, Daniel.
Thanks. We're with Occupy Chicago. We're going on about a week now. We started last Friday. It's been going on for about a week. Obviously, this is we're inspired by Occupy Wall Street in New York, which started before we did, and the movement kind of was generated by that, or at least in terms of the inspiration for it. One of our colleagues saw what was going on and just kind of put out on the social networks the idea of doing it in Chicago, and it picked up really quickly. There was immediately huge support for the idea, and we just kind of came out and showed up and started doing it, and it's been going strong and growing ever since.
Now we are camped out as we have been outside the Federal Reserve at LaSalle and Jackson, braving weather and other problems on the way, and grateful for everybody's support.
Where exactly are you guys located now? If people want to come down to Chicago and stand with you this weekend or stand with you this evening, where exactly are you guys located?
Sure, and we definitely encourage them to do so. We're at LaSalle and Jackson, which is right down in the financial district.
Two blocks up the Jackson Blue Line stop and Red Line stop. It's a real easy walk. You can get there by buses as well. I can't tell you which one just moved, but it's easy to get there.
And today, actually, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, today we're actually, for anyone listening who's in the area and who has the ability to get down there, today at 7 o'clock, we're kind of trying to have a real big General Assembly meeting for all the people who've shown interest on any level, and so definitely if they can make it, now's the time. It's really easy to find.
Even if you're just curious, even if you don't know if you support us, we support you and we want to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely.
So 7 p.m. right outside of LaSalle and Jackson?
Yes, and we're expecting a big turnout, so we're probably going to have to move the assembly itself somewhere else, but there will be someone there. That will be a staging ground of sorts. I mean, we had 100 there last night, you know, took up the entire other side of the street, and you know, we're going to need a little bit more space.
And how are the cops treating you guys? Are they doing okay? Are they causing problems? Are they leaving you alone? What's the story with that?
We've been good with them.
Yeah, we've been pretty good, and we've been trying as hard as we can to keep a good rapport with them and to keep everything civil and nonviolent. And you know, they've done their part to do the same. We've had you know, some support from the patrolmen and stuff on the street, and they've spoken you know, supportively of what's going on. Of course, you know, they're obligated to do what they've got to do. Yeah. And so we're trying to keep everything real good with them. We don't have anything going on like, you know, the unfortunate events in New York. So it'd be great if it stays this way.
I hope it does, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you guys have been really respectful, so it's good that the cops are at least being semi-respectful as well. Is there anything you guys need down there?
Yeah, well, that's all we need. Sure. Well, the main thing we need, first of all, is people. And I can't stress that enough. It might sound a bit rhetorical, but the way the thing that's been making this thing so powerful has been the rapid increase in numbers. But there's still a lot of work to do. And we have a lot of supporters online and all over the place. But the visual presence of people being down there, you know, showing their support and solidarity is really the thing that's going to make this stronger than anything else. In terms of material support, we are lacking in a few basic supplies. We need things like poster laminate to keep our signs dry because it's been raining on us for a week steady.
And apparently we cannot manage putting posters under tarps, part of the protest organization. We printed out 20 posters today, which is a shame. So
yeah. And one thing that also we're reaching out for right now, you know, aside from we've got a lot of people dropping off food and, you know, water and clothes, you know, dry clothes.
Great, thank you.
Dry clothes and blankets and all that kind of stuff. But right now we have a situation going on where we're trying to figure out our storage and our sleeping situation, because that's one of the conflicts that we've had with law enforcement. They've come at us with a series of ordinances saying we can't, you know, we can't have our stuff out there and we can't sleep out there. And it's kind of gone back and forth, and we've had a lot of wonderful help from the National Lawyers Guild with dealing with these things. But right now, we're, you know, anyone who's in the Chicago area near the Loop who has any kind of storage facilities maybe or places for people to bed down at night as we take shifts, because we're there 24 hours a day.
That happens.
Yeah, we've been there the whole time at night. We always have a constant presence. And you know, and right now we're trying to reach out to people who might have a place for protesters to stay and to keep our things, and that kind of stuff would really help. And also money donations are great. You can donate through our website, occupyshy.org, and that helps us to cover our costs. We've the last couple of days we've had to do things like rent U-Hauls to keep storage in, and of course the cost runs up pretty quick on that stuff. So those are the sorts of things we're looking for right now.
Or donate it, someone who wants to donate a truck or anything like that who'll help
that
you out.
That would be a godsend.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to donate a truck, call us now.
Yeah,
call me at home.
Definitely. Call us right now. Interrupt the interview.
I'm not going to be there.
All right. We have about a minute left. So really quickly, how long do you guys expect to be there? How long are you going to stay?
Well, the intention on most of our behalf is to stay until American democracy is restored to the people. So it's an indefinite protest, as I think most of the Occupy movement is. The plan isn't to stay until it's that time and just create symbolism. The idea is to create real change. And so we're here, like just like the other 80-plus cities that are doing it now. We're here for the long haul, as far as we're concerned. If it takes through the winter or next year or 10 years or 100 years, you know, the American people and the people of the world need to... we're fighting the good fight to establish self-determination and self-rule through our democratic horizontal power structures, and we're here for the long haul.
Well, awesome. Thank you guys for doing that. Keep up the great work. And I'm going to be down there tomorrow to stand with you guys and record it. So I will see you guys. Oh, I'm excited. I can't wait to get down there. So I will see you guys tomorrow. Keep up the great work. And if anyone can donate anything, anyone wants to come down, anyone has a truck that they can borrow, go to occupyshy.org. Thank you guys so much for being on.
Thank you very much for your support. I can't wait to see you tomorrow.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Well, with that, that's the end of the show. So thank you so much for listening today. You can download the show from iTunes. Listen to the archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz or the website at www.sarahschultzshow.com. Listen to the Sarah Schultz Show off Progressive Voices app for Androids and iPhones. And don't forget to tune in Saturday at 6 p.m. to Citywide, WIDE 99.1 Madison. Remember, Wisconsin forward, together forward. Have a great week, everybody.
Order, 14 senators, capital disorder, 14 senators, new Wisconsin heroes. What's the score? Senators 14, Governor Walker 0. What's the score? Senators 14, Governor Walker 0. Governor 0.